stand there and wait. So she did, and I walked over a little distance from where she was standing. I took a picture of this, movie of this. Bob Canuck got in the car. And Bob was in the right side of the car. So the car came up, but when I got to a Peggy, Bob had the car stopped. And he reached out his hand to her. And they had a hand shake, so to speak. She said, "You really look good." See how he granted her that wish that she had, that he would really look at her. Here there was it was about as private as it could be. I mean, there's just nothing between them. Physical contact as well as eye-to-eye contact. And she said, "You really looked at me that time." Oh, it just occurred to me that a very beautiful experience that happened in 56 when Baba left the Wilmington Airport. See, there was a little tiny rinky-dink airport still there in Myrtle Beach, but he flew out of Wilmington because of the commercial airlines. The building that this happened in is gone. We all drove up in our cars or whatever. And Baba was sitting on a concrete bench with his back to the wall. And we were all standing sort of in a crescent in front of him, just standing there loving him, enjoying his presence. And Peggy and I was at the back of the group. He got up in that first seat, went to his right, and went into the men's room, which was marked colored. In those days it was, when we had those things. And this, I always thought, how beautiful. So he went into the color. Out of the men's room, walked to his right to a wall that was perpendicular to the one that the men's room was in. Sat on another concrete bench with Motley with him, of course. And much, much to our surprise, we heard somebody call, "Peg Andy, Peg Andy," and look around, and Motley, whichever, I don't remember which one it was motioning for us to come over to Baba. So we hurried over to him. This is a part from the whole rest of the group that are still standing over there, you know. I never could remember. I know that we didn't. Well, I don't know that we didn't kneel. We could have done so. But we did something, because I remember he was sitting on his bench, and our heads were lower than his head. I remember that impression. How we did this, I don't know. And Baba said, we were very close to him, you know, just like this. He closed both of his fists very tightly. See the white knuckles? And he put his fist up to our faces like this, just very close, you know. And he said, "Hold fast to my Dhamma with both hands." And he went to my face and to Peggy's face, back and forth.
He had your hands in his hands.
No, he had
his hands.
Yeah. Just
real close?
Yeah, right up, almost touching our faces. And looking really and very intently in her eyes, as though he was saying, "Pay attention. I want you to, you know, this is important. Pay attention to what I'm saying." His expression and everything was very, very severe, looking in her eyes and going back and forth. And then he would say again, "Hold fast to my Dhamma with both hands. Never let go. No matter." idea what happens.
We were discussing that this morning before Joyce came over. Remember, I came up where I mentioned the quote of Erich in discussing the meaning of holding his Dhamman is like a child, Erich says, a child holding its mother's skirt, this total dependency, as if he were the mother. And you are totally dependent and like a child holding.
He says, Baba said, it's like a child holding on to his mother's
skirt.
Or
apron or dress.
What do Indian women wear?
Sari.
Sari. Holding on to her mother's sari. There's a contact between the child and the mother.
And
the mother can feel that the child is there because it can feel the little tugs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The child knows that it's tied to the mother, closely. The child can look around and enjoy the bazaar and see all the things that might amuse the child. And the mother's busy doing her shopping or whatever she's doing. You see, they're both doing their sort of their own thing, but they're both tied together at the same time. So it was a very good way to put it, because he's saying, while you're in the world, while you have to do your worldly things and your worldly duties, which is like the child, or like the mother, I should say, at the same time, you're in the land, you're in bewilderment.
The supermarket of life, I like to call it,
right.
Bewilderment.
So anyhow, very shortly after that, we were excused from his presence and went back to the group. Immediately, he got up from that bench and he started toward the exit. We hurried out, and you know those little flat stairs, the metal stairs that they used to use, I guess they still do in small airports, to put up to the door of the plane and you walk up the steps to get in. Well, we went right over to the foot of those steps because we knew he was going up the steps to get in the plane, you see. So when he started up the steps, I took the hem of his sadra in two fingers, my left hand. I took the hem of his sadra like this with two fingers, and I held on to it until he got high enough that I had to let go. I didn't want to, pull on him. So that was my last physical touch with Father.
Is that 58 now?
Mm-hmm. No, that was 56.
56.
That trip was my last contact with him. And
is that you trying to tell him that?
I was trying to tell him, okay, I've got it.
Yeah,
I was like that.
That's so cute.
So then he got on the plane and closed the door and taxied up to the far end of the airport and turned around and came back and said, we're, going down the tarmac to take off. Bob was up against the window like, and he waited for all this like this, just like taking off into the skies. We talked about it later on and we said, what did he mean? We know what he means by holding on to his Dhamma, but what did he mean when he said, no matter what happens? And that became a very serious question, because it was sort of like a warning, we thought. And there was a certain amount of fear involved, because we were saying, well, he's saying, brace yourself.
He said that a lot as you read the telegrams and the letters to the family. He would keep reminding people, this is going to be a difficult time now. I want you to hold my Dhamma. It was like he pressed that point home so often over the years to those who met him in the body, didn't he?
Yeah.
He kept repeating it so you'd never forget it.
So then we finally, in order to sort of put our minds at rest, our hearts at rest, we decided that he didn't mean wait till something happens and then look for my Dhamma. He was saying, take it now. Never let go.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a threat, or it wasn't a warning. Well, you take it or leave it. I mean, it could have meant anything. But I took it as though, Peggy and I took it as though he meant that he was saying, now, this the time to answer my doctor that won't pass. That was another, a very intimate, like the time that we went to the goon camp, and I believe I mentioned that on the other segment, when we went to ask Father about doing that work.
We didn't talk about that lagoon cabin vignette on the other tape because we were focusing on the barn where everyone was standing in line, and you were, and Peggy went in first.
Okay.
That was when you first met Baba, then the hug story comes. And so then there's another situation that evolves that finds the two of you sitting in an interview kind of a situation together with Mayor Baba. Now this is with someone is taking his dictation, and I don't know who. Was it Adi or Erich or somebody they're going to ask questions, and then Baba's going to answer the questions.
Well,
that's a different situation than the barn where everyone's going in just for a hug, right? This is a private interview.
Yes. Peggy said, I won't be satisfied with anyone's answer except Baba's. Baba is the only one who can satisfy me about our work.
Now this is the Sufi work.
Yes.
Now.
So, it was not only difficult, but it was kind of a no-no to try to get an interview with Baba. Because he told us, if I call you for work or whatever, that's fine. But sort of saying, I don't want you to bug me about it.
Bug, yeah.
You know.
He would call you to discuss something.
Right.
But to call him was kind of a faux pas, would you say?
Yeah, that's a good one. So anyhow, Peggy talked to Kitty and explained what she wanted to find out from Baba. We immediately went to Baba, and there was a time arranged for that evening. So, and this was in the lagoon cabin. There again, Baba's chair was in the middle of the room. It just seemed as though you just step, just almost sit on the threshold, and you'd be right at his feet.
That's a very small cabin, too.
Yeah, right. So it wasn't a matter of walking in and sitting at his feet or something like that. He was right, seemed to be right there almost at the door. And Peggy, being always much wiser than myself, understood and realized that Baba knew exactly why we had come. But I was blubbering and crying and incoherent. I always said if he hadn't been God, he wouldn't know what the hell we were talking about. Yeah. But he didn't know, of course. And so...
Peggy, though, you said, tended to be able to maintain her poise somewhat better than you in his presence.
All times and places. So, I tried to tell him that if what we were doing were pleasing to him, then we would continue, because this is how Peggy expressed it to me. But if not, then we would stop.
Close up shop, right?
Yeah, that's right. In other words, it all hinged on whether he was satisfied or pleased or whatever, however you want to put it, with our work.
At this point, you were with the Sufi group. Mm-hmm. You were in Myrtle Beach by invitation of Mayor Baba to the Sufi group under Marsha Deduce. So this is the work, and you are assigned this work as a part of that particular piece of his work in America. So that prefaces it. It's the concern over this particular thing and that you're doing that Peggy is once the top man at the top. The man at the top's word on it, whether he wants the two of you to do it or not.
Yeah. And it was very interesting because he did not, pardon me, he did not call us to him to tell us this. We went to him
to ask,
you see. He did not order us to do it. He did not order us not to do it.
Mm.
He put his...
Well, let's get back to you're blubbering in there. And
yeah,
so Peggy says, what? If you want us to close a... You
no,
want,
no,
what
no, no, I don't think Peggy said anything.
What do you... Who said what?
I said, we don't care if it's at the curbside or we don't care where or we don't care when or how. In other words, I was trying to tell them that we'd be happy to do the work no matter where or how or under what circumstances. That don't matter. It's just a matter of whether
you
what
want.
We're doing is
what you want.
What you want or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it pleases you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Baba said, what does Ivy say? Meaning Mershna Deuce. And I said, she wants us to do the work. And he put his right hand on Peggy's head and his left hand on my head together. So we always did. After that, we never had a meeting that we weren't both there. If there was something happened, like Peggy in the hospital or something like that.
Canceled.
Because he said do it together.
I can testify to that.
Right. And this was extremely important to us because we approached the work as a team. And now he sort of confirmed that. There was no, I'm the boss or Peggy's the boss or anything like that. It wasn't involved at all. Just a matter of doing it together.
And you were married, and it was a married team.
Right.
It was a good, for me, speaking as one of your Muries in this organization, it was a wonderful archetype of a happy Baba marriage to look at, as a person to look at. You know, this team that could not be separated, that no one could invade that relationship and cause it to dissolve in any way possible. That was meant a lot to me, to see that acted out. I wanted to insert that because that's really, to me, has been important, not just to some of the Sufi students, but to many, many Baba lovers, not to mention just your regular citizens down the hall or anywhere you lived or worked. And I think that archetype is important. There are others Baba had playing out that archetype of two workers who are married and who have a long-term marriage and who act out this Baba marriage that can work.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
That can work, not one that doesn't.
Yeah, so that was a very, very charged atmosphere in the Lagoon cabin while this was going on. Let me see. Standing outside the Lagoon cabin one afternoon, there was no crowd around or anything. Baba was in the Lagoon cabin at the time, having a private chat with Ivy Deuce. And we were, pardon me, you come out of the Lagoon cabin, not the side where the steps are, but the other side. We were just across that little driveway, standing. And I started to hyperventilate. I'm sorry. I never had done it before then or after then, and I still don't know why, but I just couldn't. I was just gulping air, and Peggy was afraid I was having a heart attack or something. I didn't know what was going on, and she didn't know what was going on.
That happens to me when I get real, real nervous. It's happened on a mountain cliff before, like I thought I was going to die.
Oh, shut up.
Interesting.
Well, it just happened, you know. And so we were looking in through the window, and Baba's chair again is in the middle of the Lagoon cabin, so we could see his head.
Uh-huh.
We couldn't see Mercedes.
She was in there.
Yeah. They were having a conference or whatever. And she told us later that when he looked out of the window and looked over toward us, Mershna said to Baba, He simply adores her.
You adore Peggy.
Yeah. And Bravo put his finger up like this, meaning God. That's what he would signify, God. He would say, I am the one to be adored. Perhaps I might explain just a trifle about what I mean, what I meant and said about Peggy being a veil. This veil is not opaque. It's a transparent veil that separates, for instance, in this case, separates Baba and myself, because it was so much of the time that I was concerned with Peggy. And when perhaps I should have been totally concerned with Baba. But this was the way it had to be. This was my way. And I'm sure that in no way did Baba resent my love for Peggy. So another subject, I would like to tell you a story of what happened to me. It was a few years after Baba dropped, after Peggy dropped the body. And I went to India. On this particular day that we didn't go to Marisad, just after breakfast, I hurried out of the program center and wanted to go to the tomb as quickly as possible to have some private time. We like to imagine that we can go up there and just bother ourselves, be there. But as I went across the road, these thoughts were coming to my mind. Sorry. I was not thinking, as it were. I'm sure you've all had this happen when inspirations or thoughts or something just seems to come out of the blue to you, and you're aware of it, but you're not really thinking. And the first impression that came to my mind was, I'm not going to pay any attention to the trains today. When I'm up in the tomb, and the trains go through Marathon, I'm not going to listen to them with my heart. Because usually when I was there in the tomb, and I would hear the trains, I would be reminded of our trip, the trip I call the hip trip. When Peggy broke her hip over there, we had to take her on the train to Bombay. A story that I'll tell later. So I was impressed with the thought that I will not hear the trains today in the sense that it will upset me. I walked a little further, and the thought came, I'm not going to watch that dear old man comes up to the village every day, or nearly every day. He always looks like he has about a 2-day beard. It's not really a beard, he just needs shaved. And gray hair, gray beard. But he comes into the tomb with such reverence and such love and such respect that I would get the feeling that I really ought not to watch. It was so intimate, this village man and Baba. This man would come in and kneel at the tomb. He would never see me, didn't see anything. I was always so touched with his love for Baba. And I thought, I'm not going to watch him today. I'm going to watch the little children when they come up and step over the threshold and fold their little hands and turn around and out they go to get the facade and down the hill. I always loved to watch them. They were only in the tomb for seconds, but everything was done that needed to be done for them. Not today. I'm going to look at the murals in the tomb and say to myself, that looks like Picasso. I can see only one eye of that lady's face, and I should be able to see both of them. I would be critical, in other words. I wonder who put the heart on somebody today. It's a little bit too round. It should be more heart-shaped. And this rose over here is not symmetrical with this one over here. Who did that? Or the little white flowers on the strings, you know, that are all over his mind. There would be a space in those, between the little flowers. It was a little too much for me. I wonder who put those there. I wonder who put those letters over there on his mind. I wonder if everybody else sees that little picture bob up in the ceiling that I always see. Okay, coming back today. It was like something was saying to me, don't play all those silly games today. Something more important has to be done. I have no idea what that might be. So I kissed the threshold, stepped into the tomb, knelt at Baba's feet and kissed the coverlet. And had a little short conversation with him. And then I went over to the left and sat in the corner on the mat. And immediately my behind starts saying, can't you make me more comfortable? This is really hard to sit on. My body is complaining, you see. And these rocks, this wall behind my back is not very comfortable. So I moved around a little bit to satisfy that need. My mind starts saying, don't pay any attention to that, that is the body. I am the one. I am the really important one. If it weren't for me, you wouldn't know where you are, you wouldn't have learned anything. My consciousness is saying, you know, I am it. And then my heart says, let me have my say. As Baba did at our first meeting, if you recall, the vision of Peggy in that wrapping. Now, of course, I'm sitting in the tomb with my eyes closed, not to be distracted by anything visual. And Baba gave me another vision. As a six-year-old boy, a child, in his first day of school, and as a 73-year-old man, which was my age at this point.
7 years ago.
I was a witness and a participant. And I watched myself going through the classroom to the teacher's desk. I even remembered the teacher's name, Miss Swope. After all those many years, she was a heavy-set woman. And I asked her if I could go to the toilet. And apparently she doubted that I had that need, so she refused it. Well, I always say she refused me, but nature didn't. Nature took its course, and I had a very embarrassing, humiliating experience. And I was so frightened and so ashamed and so embarrassed of what had happened that I didn't know what to do. And so I started to cry because I was so upset. And I just turned and ran out of the room and ran out of the building. And as I was running home, I remembered saying to myself, I'll never go back there again. I sometimes think that this experience might have had something to do with my dislike of school and my unwillingness to learn. And then the parade started. Single file, one by one, these people walked in front of me from my left to my right. I couldn't see their features clearly enough to see who they were, but I knew who they were. And everyone represented some act that someone had done to me during my childhood and during my life. Theft, sexual abuse, on and on and on. And as each one passed in front of me, I remembered who they were and what they had done. I wasn't surprised by this parade. In other words, I wasn't thinking to myself, what is this going on? What's happening? Suddenly, being a person all my past life and would never even consider it, the idea of forgiving anyone, forgiveness was not part of my nature at all. When someone had done something unkind to me or something that I couldn't handle, I would just close the door. I could never open it. I did this to people that I loved. I did it over and over again. I did it to my own father when he wrote to me and said he was sick. Would I please come and see him? And I was angry with him because of, I had blamed him for all my unhappiness as a child. So I didn't go to see him. And he died, and I didn't go to the spirit. I'm telling you this so that you'll understand how bitter I was, how stupid. Of course, I realized much later on that he was not responsible for all my unhappiness as a child. He was just who he was and what he was.
That's a very difficult thing for all of us, I think. You know, to really experience that. That people just are what they are and they do what they do because these impressions are so strong and somehow Mayor Baba unlocked, you know, this Sanskarit review impression, you know, film strip of things and released it. Didn't you tell me you cried as this was going on or you shed tears later or something? First you were puzzled, and then you started to shed tears.
Then very much to my surprise, the idea came to me that I could have at least forgiven Miss Wolf for what she had done, because she didn't do what she did out of mean part of it, so to be unkind to me or to cause me any pain or something. She just made a mistake. And the little children in the room who laughed, they didn't laugh to embarrass me. They laughed because of their little childlike sense of humor. This was funny. So that where the process of forgiveness began to happen to me when I realized. Then beyond that, I began to realize that all these people that had done these things to me did not do these things to me out of hate, just simply out of ignorance.
What can you say? You can say? You had a breakthrough or something about your own ignorance.
Yes. So, beginning with spoken then to the children and then to all these people who had walked in front of me, the idea of forgiveness occurred to my heart, and almost immediately, this flood of love just overwhelmed me. And I realized that I didn't need to, but there was no need for me to find these people, to go to them and tell them that I forgave them. Because the forgiveness was, it was done. It had happened. I didn't have to say anything. I didn't have to do anything. I just knew that everything was all right.
Well, at least it was the beginning of the forgiveness process.
Right.
This is a very strong experience in Baba's tomb, and I know a lot of people have them.
Yes.
But this one, because he's perfect and infinite. You know, he knows what each one of us needs at that time that we need it. And for some people, you know, it takes going all the way to his tomb to go through something like this. For others, it can happen somewhere else.
Yes.
During a meditation in front of this photo or something. But at the same time, this, of all the stories you've told me in the last 3 years, this one, when I first heard it, was the most powerful for me of all of them, of Baba really doing what he does best.
As you see, if you think back for a moment, when I left the pilgrim center and started up the hill, Baba started preparing me to experience this by eliminating distractions. This gives you an idea of how perfect and how completely effective Baba works with us in his own way, in his own time. I often think that he didn't want me to go to my next lifetime with this toxic waste in my heart that I've been carrying for years and dealt with people in a most ignorant, unkind way. This unwillingness to forgive or be aware of forgiveness flavored my whole life. This is why it was so important for me to learn this lesson. And since I've always been stubborn, since I've always been full of righteous wrath when someone had done something to me that I thought was unfair or unkind, or steps outside the parameters of my parameters of our friendship or our love, then I would just simply close that door. So I felt such a feeling of relief. I thought later on it was something like someone had come to you and say, a doctor would say to you, we're very happy to tell you that our first diagnosis was mistaken. You don't have cancer, or you don't have AIDS, or something like that. But the relief to me in the tomb that day was beyond that. And then I thought, oh my God, how am I going to make things right with all these people that I have hurt? How can I tell my father that? And then all of a sudden I knew I didn't have to do a thing. I didn't have to go anywhere. I didn't have to talk to anyone. I didn't have to say anything. It was done. Not by me. I still didn't come out and say I forgive them all. But I knew it was done. Baba did it, you see. Baba removed that poison. And I can say quite honestly that this experience changed my life. At this moment, I can think of no one or any experience with anyone or any group that I feel any bitterness or any anger or any desire to close that door. Perfectly happy with my relationships, past and present. And this is the brain surgery and the heart surgery that Baba did for me in the tomb. He not only knew beforehand what he was going to do with me, he not only knew what my greatest need of my soul was, he did something about it. That's the thing. He didn't just give me some glimmer of an idea of forgiveness. He just took me by the hand and walked me right through this whole experience. I like to talk about this because I want people to have an understanding of how important forgiveness is in their own lives. When we fail to forgive or refuse to forgive, we're not hurting that other person. We're not getting vengeance. The only thing we're doing is hurting ourselves. That other person goes on his everyday life not even aware of the situation at all. And it spoils
every relationship that we have to some extent. So I would pray that you all find some way in your heart to forgive. There is no medicine, there is no anything in this world. Life is more important than forgiveness.
Doesn't Baba say that something about he's already forgiven us before we, what is the quote, before we do these things we're not proud of, or we,
yeah,
you know.
It's like he's telling us that it's our birthright.
Yeah.
That he never fails to forgive. During the new life, if you read the book on the new life, you'll see that Baba, in many instances, called his mommy together and said, if I have done anything that you feel has been unfair or unkind or whatever, now is the time, you know, to deal with it. Now here's God Almighty, who never needs forgiveness, inviting his companion, friends, lovers, to come to him and say, you did thus and such. There's a very beautiful story that Farage tells in the Motley Hall about Muhammad. Muhammad was in his tent, near to death, lying on a pallet on the floor, on the floor of the tent. And it did exactly the same thing. This is a story that Baba told. He told his companions that if I have done anything that you feel has been unfair or unkind or that has hurt your heart, now is the time that we deal with it. And none of the body, or none of the companions replied. They didn't say anything. But a Bedouin, a desert man, standing over at the opening of the tent, dressed in black, raised his hand rather timidly, and Muhammad caught the motion and motioned for the man to come to him. The companions put their hands on their swords or daggers. You know, they thought, how can this desert man, this untouchable, how can he approach our master? Muhammad said, peace. So they put their weapons away. The man came up to Muhammad. Muhammad said, well, what is your complaint? And the man said, at the Battle of Badr, my back was cut by your whip. And Muhammad ordered that his whip be brought. No one moved. They were just paralyzed with fear of what might happen. Here's their beloved dying, literally dying. But Muhammad said, obey. So one of them ran and got his weapon, brought it to him, handed it to him. Muhammad handed the whip to the man. The man said, but my back was bare. So Muhammad brought him up to a sitting posture and removed his shirt. And then Muhammad looked up at this man and nodded as if to say,
Go ahead,
you know. And the man lifted the whip and then he dropped it. And he leaned over and kissed the mole on Muhammad's back. This to me is forgiveness. This man who had never known any love in his entire life had no idea. And I like to interpret this story that Muhammad went through this whole scenario about asking. and the companions and all the